The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 132nd episode of Dave's Gone By. On this Thursday, June 23rd, 2005, the name of this episode is Bukak. I know it sounds dirty, and under certain circumstances, it might even be dirty, but no, we play by FCC rules here on Dave's Gone By, and Bukak is the name of our special guest, Paul Bukak, who is a writer and actor, and who has a one-man show going up off-Broadway called Bukak's House of Baseball. The idea is that pretty much every aspect of life and politics can be reflected in our national pastime, and the actions of people like Jason Giambi and Daryl Strawberry and Derek Jeter and Lou Gehrig, they serve as guideposts, cautionary warnings, and leaders by example. And Paul Bukak not only explains all this, but reenacts games and crucial innings in a very physical way. Since I'm a baseball fan and a theater fan, I thought it might be fun to talk to Paul Bukak about his show, about baseball, and about whatever else comes up. That's the idea of Dave's Gone By. It's an hour of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music. We mix it up every week with a little bit of everything for everyone, like tonight. Besides the interview with Paul Bukak, we also have one of our most popular segments, The News Gone By, a comical look at current events in a daily showy, Leno monologue-y, weekend update-y kind of a way. And if that weren't enough for an hour's entertainment, we also have a segment called Dave Goes Off, where I go off on a topic of my own choosing, often based on a strange or funny or unsettling experience I've had in my life, which is exactly the case with tonight's Dave Goes Off. So it's comedy, talk radio, interviews, the whole gamut, sponsored by Hewlett Minuteman Press for all your copying and printing needs, and Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine for everything you need to know about Broadway and beyond. Both Minuteman and Performing Arts Insider offer 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners, so stay tuned for more info on both these wonderful sponsors. You can listen on here or on the web at am1240wgbb.com. Either way, you'll hear me, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, and humorist. You'll hear the content that's rated DGB-13, and you'll hear the occasional commercial like, this one. Sir, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Are you photocopying your butt?
Yeah, isn't it cool? I want to send lots of copies.
Not in a public library.
I know, it's so expensive here, 25 cents a cheek.
No, I mean, why not go to Hewlett Minuteman Press?
Hewlett Minuteman Press?
1315 Broadway in Hewlett. They can make copies, they can laminate it, print it in a booklet, put it on a mug.
My ass on a mug. Wow.
Call 516-569-5577. 516-569-5577. And hey, stop it! You can't copy that!
But what do I put on the other side of the mug?
30 seconds is a long time. You can say a lot in half a minute about your business, your product to sell, your message. Say it on Dave's Gone By. Easy, inexpensive, effective. For details and the rate card, davesgoneby.com or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Imagine how much you can say to my listeners by advertising on Dave's Gone By. Just like this, 28, 29, 30. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York, and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. Paul Bukak. Wait, let's give the audience about 10 seconds to make whatever jokes they want about your last name.
And whatever ones that they've come up with.
You've heard them?
Maybe. But once in a while there's something new, so please let them make their jokes. I enjoy them as much as the next guy. You get used to it.
You must have had fun with women on Halloween. I mean, that's the one that first comes to mind.
Yeah. Halloween. But at a certain level, when your name is Bukak, Every day is Halloween.
Oh, okay. Well, every day is Halloween with us here on Dave's Gone By with our guest Paul Boocock. And
yep.
It is B-O-O-C-O-C-K. And the reason we have him as our guest tonight is that he's got an off-Broadway show playing at the Flea Theater on White Street downtown, opening June 30th, very end of June.
Exactly.
And it's running, what's the run on this?
It's every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night at 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's it. But to keep it simple, think of July and think that every Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night, you can go see Boocock's House of Baseball at 9 p.m. at the Flea Theater.
Now, why would people want to see Boocock's House of Baseball?
Because it's called Boocock's House of Baseball, but it's about everything that's going on in this world right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just finished in the fall doing this show called Boocock Equals VP with this wonderful director that I'm still working with named Mary Catherine Burke. And that show was about me running for Vice President of the United States of America. And it'd be, in a political year, a politically polarized year. And I decided that I was, just as suited to have the second highest position in the land as anyone else. And I was getting very depressed, and here comes the revelation of my political bent at the idea that George Bush might get reelected president.
Gee, I can't imagine such a thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
But anyway, well, that's my political bent.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into a conversation, me and the director, about okay, well, what if this guy gets reelected? What is left in this country that we will keep us in this country?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think baseball is about the only thing. But then I sort of, I thought about that and I said, well, baseball's not a bad thing to keep you in this country because baseball still sort of, I'm not even going to say sort of, I said baseball still represents, I would think, all the great things about this country. And what I'm saying here in Boocock's House of Baseball is that all the great qualities of democracy are sort of inherently, in baseball.
Well, how do you mean?
It's a team sport. I mean, I'm almost quoting David Mamet from The Untouchables. It's a team sport that demands a team attitude, but moments of individual achievement, as David Mamet says.
Mm-hmm.
But those moments of individual achievement have to be on behalf of the whole, on behalf of the entire body politic. Individual achievement just for the sake of me, I, my, is meaningless. In a democracy, and meaningless in baseball. What comes to mind here is there are certain baseball players, and I think anybody who's a baseball fan sort of has this list in their mind of players who do well statistically, who rack up big numbers, big home run numbers, big runs batted in numbers, but somehow their individual achievements statistically don't translate into winning baseball, don't translate into contribution to the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the show, I talk a lot about who the players are that are out there that personify that philosophy of a contribution to the whole.
Well, who would we be talking about? Mike Piazza in his prime,
Mike Piazza
Hernandez?
In his prime, the one I come back to over and over again, I know it's the most obvious one in the book these days, because he's sort of known for his intangibles, is Derek Jeter.
Right, yeah.
He always seems to be at the right place at the right time when something absolutely must be done to win the game. And this doesn't say that he doesn't year after year end up putting up big numbers. He does. I mean, by any statistical measurement, the guy's going to make it to the Hall of Fame. But his hits seem to matter more than the hits of other people, and I don't want to,
isn't that as much the media creation as his own persona and his own quality?
Well, I think there's something that starts to happen that's circular there. I think to myself that Derek Jeter is probably a guy who showed up in this game with a decent level of self-esteem. He then did come through in the clutch at times, and then people reinforced the idea that he was that kind of player, and now he plays with the sort of relaxed attitude that you need in order to keep coming through in the clutch. The Yankees, of course, have this other player now, A-Rod, getting paid more than anybody else to play the game, and he seems to not be that kind of guy, and that seems to then become a reinforced idea, perhaps even in his own mind.
But how does this become a theatrical equivalent that is not only political, but mm-hmm. You put it on stage and it becomes interesting solo drama?
Right. Well, I perform great moments in baseball as sort of a docudrama of moments, of great moments.
How do you mean?
Well, there's a very famous play that folks who are baseball fans know about. A couple of years ago, Derek Jeter made a play in a playoff game where he ran across the entire infield, not a play in any playbook, caught a ball that was thrown wildly from the outfield, and then pushed the ball to the catcher, who then made a tag, and it sort of then started a momentum for the Yankees. And I do a section of the show where I describe that moment and do it while I'm describing it.
Hmm.
And then channel that into conversation about what that moment meant to New York City right after what we call the events of 9/11. That there was something that happened sort of from that moment on where he pulled together an entire city and then an entire country that not even normally inclined to be supportive of anything New York necessarily.
Especially the Yankees. Yeah.
Especially the Yankees, who personify in many ways, who even personify in many ways some of the things that I don't like about an increasingly corporatized entertainment industry. But in a certain moment, he did seem to dig down for something deeper that inspired people and kept people involved in believing that there was a reason to get up the next day and see the next game, to see how this drama played itself out.
Well, it isn't new to see baseball as a metaphor for all sorts of life things, all the way back to Casey at the bat.
Sure.
This was quite metaphorical. But, I mean, you could just as easily see baseball as embodying a lot of the negative stereotypes of what happens in America or any country.
Well, I get into that, too. In many ways, what I'm saying in this show is that you can always look at baseball, and it can embodies some of the great things about America, but it is a way of looking at the truth of America now. And that was another thing that my director and I started to discuss, and that is now bleeding into this show, the idea that in an increasingly corporatized media where you can't necessarily get the truth about what's going on in this world, particularly in this country, if you go to the back pages, if you go to the sports pages, things are a little less censored or self-censored about the information about what happens to these ball players, and there is information in that about what's really going on. The steroid scandals I get into a little bit. And,
exactly, yeah.
And, there's information that you can get from that.
I mean, like, in our news right now is the revelation of who was Deep Throat for Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
The fact they had to be so secretive in a parking lot for this to be dug up and come out, and it was dangerous. Meanwhile, in baseball, steroids were this almost laughable open secret that a guy basically wrote a book about to make money on. And then even then it was tough to get hearings going.
Well, I mean, but on a certain level, I think that was even the case with Watergate. I mean, it's interesting because what you just said was something it hit me that way too. And I went back to the source material, All the President's Men, and that's the movie, not the book. So I'll say that up front. But watching that, I started to realize this was a story that was sort of there for the taking for a long time, and it took a lot of hammering at it and a lot of repeating that these guys were doing the bad thing. And if you looked at Richard Nixon's track record for his entire career, he was doing things that were, at the very least, borderline unethical.
Although probably no worse than Lyndon Johnson had done in his term.
Granted, on a certain level, it's unfair for me to pick out Nixon more than LBJ or any of the guys. But if you looked at Nixon's career, there was a pattern. And yet it took, a little bit of hammering. You keep hammering at it, even There are great scenes in that movie where the folks working on the newspaper itself are like, why are we sticking with this story? Ben Bradley was like, where's the story? Where's the story? I'm not seeing the sources yet.
Hmm.
And yet, eventually, the democratic process, or at least the checks and balances of a media watching the democratic process and reporting the truth of the democratic process, did catch up to Nixon.
But what happened in the steroid scandal is that the democratic process sort of caught up and nobody cared.
Yeah,
people don't even know if they think steroids are wrong, let alone, you know, I mean, they're wrong for your body, but whether it's wrong to even take people out of the Hall of Fame or wrong for them to use them, because how different is it from somebody who's doing special vitamins?
Or, no, I know. I mean, a lot of people talked about a lot of the ball players who've had things done to their eyes. Laser surgery. What's the difference between Greg Maddux and Bernie Williams having laser surgery, which is ultimately sort of a radical maneuver with the original equipment you were given,
mm-hmm.
and sticking in 10 cc's of testosterone in your butt cheeks. maybe it's not that different.
I wouldn't know either way.
Me neither.
Hey, by the way, let's just backtrack a little bit. Before you started doing Bukowski's House of Baseball, you were doing, you were part of comedy improv sketch troupes.
Yeah, the one that I did for the longest stretch of time was something called Premium Bob, which was a two-person comedy team that for a pretty substantial stretch of time back there in the 90s, was a cult New York hit, and we even eventually we got out to the other coast and had our TV deal, and it came and it went.
Yeah, what happens? What happens in those cases? You work on. I mean, you were also part of Elevator Repair Service.
Elevator. I still do some work with them from time to time, and that's a great team to be a part of. Those guys are fantastic.
But what happens? I mean, I guess there's a shelf life unless you hit it really big. Is that the thing where you're young and you're with a group?
You gotta. I mean, there's a shelf life, and you know, after my experiences with particularly with the Premium Bob thing, it started to make me realize that a lot of things have to work in your favor for you to make it big. You know, it's like there's so many ways for things to not get to that level that when they do, it's just some luck on top of some luck, and then you got to have some luck on top of that too.
And then if it doesn't happen, it makes more sense to sort of stop and go off and do something else, not like start it back at the middle of the hill and try with the same people.
I think at a certain level, you can't do that. That's, you know, I think the business itself wishes that you could just bottle what talents folks have and just bottle it and be able to just produce it as product. But in the natural order of things is for things to, you know, evolve, and if they don't evolve to another place where there's growth and then usually things they naturally come to an end.
How would you describe your style of comedy, of what you do when you are on stage?
It's very physical stuff. I mean, it's almost dance at times. And I guess what I mean when I say dance, not so much like modern or jazz or ballet, but like dance in the way that physical comedians of even the silent era are dancers. They're sort of elements of mime. Would you call it dumb show?
Well, also, I think W.C. Field called Charlie Chaplin, quote, a goddamn ballet dancer.
Yeah. And
which he meant as sort of an insult, but I think even he knew that, no, it was a beauty and a comedy to what he was doing.
Yeah, the Elevator Repair Service folks I work with, there's a lot of that. And Premium Bob, we did a lot of that, too. And I think that's still, in so many ways, that's the stuff that always works. You can be topical, and in the show I'm doing right now, there's a lot of topical stuff. But the bits that people are going to remember, I think, past, oh, yeah, I agree with that, okay, I disagree with what that guy just said, the stuff they're going to remember, regardless of their opinions, is the physical stuff.
And speaking of physical stuff, there was a mention made, and I wasn't too clear on this from the publicity folks, but Are you a photographer, or you were photographed on some level by someone?
At the peak of Premium Bob,
mm-hmm.
things were hot enough for us that when the New Yorker did an issue about what New York was in 1999, they got Richard Avedon, who was, I think, their main sort of high-end staff photographer, and we got a photo taken of us with a bunch of other of the sort of downtown, the important downtown artists there. So there's a great picture of us that I still have that I look at to remind myself that I have some worth.
Was that an amazing experience? Was it an all-day thing, or was he quick and within an hour you were out of there?
This is a guy, and I think this is true of so many people who are artists, even ones whose work has sort of an immediacy that says, oh, well, they just caught a moment. There's a lot of planning that goes into that. It was Richard Foreman, the guy from Hedwig.
Oh, wow. John Foreman Mitchell?
I think it was exactly.
Or Einstein and Trask.
It was Mitchell.
Yeah.
Uta Hagen and Amy Sedaris. And when he took the photo, it was taken in a subway car of the sort of 60s, 70s, early 80s era when there was lots of work on it, lots of graffiti art on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he posed us sort of in the middle of the car in various poses. I'm hovering over Amy Sedaris as if I'm gonna eat her prosthetic leg. my partner David Latham is swinging through an open window on the side. But he did it piece by piece. He took a Polaroid of each of the people in the photo, and then took those Polaroids. I watched him do this and assembled the Polaroids to see if ahead of time each of those each of the images he'd captured from each individual person in the photo was going to work. And then he took the picture, and it took half a day to assemble just that one shot.
You think that's for real, or that's just an exclusive why they would pay him thousands and thousands of dollars? You know, so, I have to look like I'm really puzzling this out.
Yeah,
so let me take a few Polaroids that are, you know, like 30 cents a piece, and that'll make me look like I'm really earning my money.
You are more cynical than I am.
Oh, totally, dude.
I don't know. I think that's, you know, there may be some photographers who just, like, you know, thank you, man. But I think that's legitimately his problem.
I know. But, you know, you don't see baseball photographers who snap that amazing or sports photographers catching, the player an hour beforehand, having go up to the basket and say, well, if you make the shot from here,
I
can get the fingertips just
looking
like that.
Yeah, you got to roll just off that finger. The middle fingernail would be best. Yeah.
No, they just sort of grab it, and sometimes they get really, really lucky. But I'm very lucky to have had you as a guest on this episode of Dave's Gone By. Last question.
Sure.
You're doing Bukowski's House of Baseball. Mm-hmm. What are you working on while that's going on, or what do you plan afterwards?
Oh my gosh, well, there are a couple things sort of happening. I have a role on a Cartoon Network show called The Venture Brothers, which is a sort of knockoff of Johnny Quest, but for an adult audience. And I did some voice work with that. The two main guys in that are James Urbaniak, and I'm going to forget his name. Forgot it.
Urbaniak is part of that whole downtown scene.
He's part of that whole scene.
Yeah.
They put a bunch of those shows together in 2003, 2004, and it just got picked up again. So hopefully I get some more work on that. And I don't know. I'm not entirely sure what the next Bukowski show is going to be. It probably will still have some baseball in it. Almost all my shows have some baseball elements in it. But I'm thinking sort of more and more about something that has almost no language at all. That's almost purely physical, and I'm not sure what it's going to be. But you know, as I've been working on this thing, I've been falling more and more for the stuff that is the purely physical stuff. So I do like to roll the monosyllabic, the polysyllabics off my lips too. But we'll see. There's a variety of things.
Well, polysyllabically, I want to thank Paul Bukowski, B-O-O-C-O-C-K, for joining us on Dave's Gone By. Please remember that his show, Bukowski's House of Baseball, is playing at the Flea Theater.
It opens June 30th through the 23rd of July, and we'll see what happens in terms of, we'll see what happens after that.
We'll see if it's a hit, a home run, or a grand slam.
There you go. A solid single up the middle would make me plenty happy.
That'd be great. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us in the neighborhood.
You bet.
Listen to me. Listen closely to me.
That's right, buddy. Listen to me anytime you want to, because Dave Gone By episodes are preserved on compact disc. Entire shows with a nice cover, track listings, own your favorite shows, or give a Dave's Gone By CD gift. Dave'sGoneBy.com has an episode guide, and you can order there, too. $14 for CDs, $12 for cassettes, shipping included. Buy more, get a discount. So go to Dave'sGoneBy.com, get a CD, and listen to me.
Darling, listen closely to me.
Hey, baby. For a good time, don't call me. Read Dave Lefkowitz's book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It's got all these funny comedies in it. They make you laugh, they make you think, they make you... Ooh, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. 516-295-1511. Or DavesGoneBy.com. If you like Dave on the air, you love him between the covers.
WGBB, the place for you and me. We're one big family. And let me make one thing clear. There's so many shows to hear. Like Joyce Keller, the radio psychic. Wednesdays 11 p.m., she's one fine uncanny chick. And Fridays at 6, if you can't get a date, there's Bonnie D. Graham telling you how to mate. Saturday nights, the Mikey and Jimmy show. For rock and roll comedy, the place to go. And make sure to listen on Sundays too. And 7 p.m., it's Joe Salzo's Worldview. So many programs on 1240 a.m. If you had half a brain, you tune in to them. Yes, WGBB is the place to listen all week long. Joyce Keller, Wednesdays at 11, Long Island's Dating with Bonnie D. Graham. Friday nights at 6, Mikey and Jimmy. And politics on Worldview with Joe Saldo, Sundays at 7. So if you love Dave's Gone By, give these other shows a try. They serve your community. If you listen, you'll know why. They're groovy and that's no lie.
Hi, this is Paul Bucock of Bucock's House of Baseball, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB.
Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. I had a strange incident occur to me a couple of weeks ago. It's sort of an odd occurrence, a little bit disturbing, not in any way turn out to be dangerous or anything like that, but something that threw me a little bit, shook me a little bit, totally out of the blue. And I thought I would come and share that with you, because that's part of what this show is about, especially this segment, Dave Goes Off, where I go off on a topic or a rant, or sometimes just talk a little bit about my life and stuff, because, you know, there aren't that many perks to having your own radio show on a tiny little station on Long Island, but that's one of them. So I wanted to kind of get this off my chest, and I wanted to do it about a month ago, and with my going away to Los Angeles, and then doing the Tony show, and preparing for another week away, just didn't have the opportunity, but I it has stayed with me, and I wanted to share it with you now. And kind of there's one radio broadcaster on WGBB, Larry Davidson, who has a show on right before mine, actually, or it's at 6 o'clock to 6:30 on Thursday nights, called WGBB Tonight. He hosts the Thursday version of it. And he always compares me to Garrison Keillor of Lake Wobegon. And it's not the most apt description of what I do, because there's sketches and things that are Howard Sternian or Harry Shearer-ish in monologues. I also play music like Ben Skelza, and I do interviews like, you know, 100 other radio people. That's part of what the show's about. It's eclectic. But anyway, this is going to be, I guess, sort of Wobegonian, perhaps, except it's not set in the wilds of Minnesota, but the weirds of Babylon, Long Island. And it happened on a really happy Sunday afternoon. Saturday afternoon it was. See, I'm already getting the details wrong. The further away you get from the incident, the more your mind tends to pull it in different directions. But what happened was, I was going to see theater that day in Manhattan, as I love to do on the weekends, and I saw a really fun show that I expected to hate called Altar Boys, rock musical with a comedic Christian Judeo-religious theme. Really hard to describe, and it sounds like it's going to be, you know, a Godspell sort of event or something really campy and dumb, but it's so well done and so well performed, and the songs are pretty funny that it's a sleeper. You know, people who didn't ever expect they would enjoy Altar Boys are enjoying it. So I went to see that, had a fabulous time, and then had to hurry back out towards Long Island because I had a cover for one of the other DJs here, Trevor Vassell, who handles the Saturday evening shift from 7:30 on. So I've been doing that every once in a while for him as needs be. It kind of keeps me behind the board and you know, gives me a hand in the radio station that teaches me how to work things rather than just be a talking head at the mic. So I come into Babylon and I do it. There's a decision I needed to make, and I know it sounds really picayune, but it figures into the story. Should I eat in the city and then, you know, jump on the train and then get here? Or should I come in early, go right to a restaurant, have a nice meal in town, which I rarely do, and then just grab the cab quickly over to GBB, which is, you know, in West Babylon? And I opted for once for going to Babylon, because it was a nice, you know, the days are already longer. It was a beautiful sunny day. I wanted to get to Babylon, try one of the restaurants, and, you know, take it from there. So I'm going from the train, no problem with the train ride. I'm walking along, and I'm heading down past where the cab stands are over to the big main road, which I don't even remember what it's called. But it's got all the restaurants and shops on it. And I'm walking, and just in this really kind of neat, mellow mood, a little hungry, trying to decide which restaurant to go into, and there's all the, you know, Italian places and the usual complement of Long Island town's restaurants. Sort of in my own head, and passing somewhat near a church, which also sort of figures into all this. And as I'm walking along, I do have my radar on, because, you know, I'm not a tall person, and I'm not a particularly, you know, imposing or macho-seeming person. So ever since I was young, since I was four, since I started dealing with other people, I watch, you know, my back and my front, you know, because I'm always figuring what's going to happen, who's going to make trouble, who has problems with me. And it rarely happens, but even to this day, I'm a 41-year-old man, and I still get garbage occasionally from people who make fun of my height or do something stupid, you know. I don't think it's even personal. They probably do it to a dozen people over the course of an afternoon because they're drunk. But I'm on guard. So I'm walking along, and I see in the distance three young men, really teenagers, actually, but young teenagers. Couldn't be, I mean, older than 8 and 9, but something in the 11 and 12 range. And they're coming along, and they're talking to each other, and they've got lacrosse implements and items on them. I can see them from that far back. And they're just sort of yakking with each other. And already, you know, the antenna goes up because, jocks and young kids and, you know, are they going to mess with me? Now, they were young enough that it wouldn't be like these 18-year-old, 17-year-old bully boys. But, you know, already the thing is, do I cross the street? Do I keep walking? Do I just, you know, eyes open, ears open, whatever happens, happens. And so I get closer to them. And the boys, you know, walk forward, and we pass, or sort of pass each other. Two of the boys keep walking forward, and one of the guys stops about, you know, 10 feet in front of me. And I'm like, okay, what's this going to be? And he says, excuse me, can I ask you a question? And I was like, all right. Totally hackles up, fangs bared, ready for anything. And the kid said, this white, incredibly normal-looking young boy from West Babylon, assumedly, says, would you mind giving me a hug? And, of course, silence followed that. I was like, squinted my eyes, looked at him, did not say, what are you, nuts, or, you know, what's your game, but I did kind of give him the, huh? And all these things started running through my head. Of course, I mean, certainly the Michael Jackson trial had been going on and
I mean, not like the O.J. trial, but that had been prevalent in the news of oh my God, you know, man touching young children, and also other things start going through your head of like, well, what's the real thing here? Is he making fun of me? You know, because again, I'm not the most macho looking person in the world, so maybe he's gonna goof on me like I'm gay or something, which I'm not, but which is perfectly okay. But you don't want, you know, strangers coming up to you and goofing on you about your being gay unless you have a knife or mace to deal with them. So I'm thinking, you know, what is the game here? And meanwhile, his friends are just, you know, sort of keeping walking. They're not standing around, they're not circling me, they're just walking along, and he's standing there in front of me. And I say, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Are you... And the other thing, because the church was right there, is, are you religious? Are you a born-again Christian? I think I said. Trying to get the angle. And he said, no, well, I mean, he might as well be, but he said, no, that's not it. I just like to be hugged. And what could I do? I walked up to him. I put my arms around him. And for 3 seconds, maybe, I hugged him. And it was very nice. And even as I was doing it, my head was like, you know, what's the game? Are they watching this? Is somebody watching this? Are his parents across the street suddenly seeing this strange man, middle-aged man, hugging this boy for no particular reason in the street, and they're going to rush over and kill me? And I hugged, let go, he let go. I said, have a great day. And he said, you too. And he walked away and, you know, scurried up to join his friends who were walking down. And I just kind of stood there and then started walking. And, you know, kept every once in a while staring back in their direction kind of a thing to see, you know, what he was saying or if they even knew. And I swear to God, they looked just like regular kids coming back from a lacrosse game, talking the way they talk, as if what just happened, this weird thing that happened, was the most normal thing in the world. And again, me being me. As soon as it was over, I started patting, like, my back, and I'm checking my pockets and the back of my knapsack to make sure, oh, wait a minute, maybe he got, a cell phone, maybe he got my wallet, maybe he got my keys. No. He just wanted a hug. And then I couldn't shake that, and felt good about it, but at the same time really sort of upset with myself that all this unpleasantness, all this dirt stuff, was clogging up my head about this particular moment when it really was just an innocent, really sweet thing. It was a Leo Biscaglia moment. Remember him, the Italian lecturer on positivism and being friendly and neighborly and you know, doing well with your life? And he would just hug everybody and tell stories about his hugging people. So I finally found a restaurant, and I wanted to go to this nice little place that you know, run, I think, by a woman and her husband, kind of Italianish meal, and I thought, oh my God, it's going to take forever to get service, and I'll never be on time for my shift at the radio station. But no, they were actually fine. I told them I was in a bit of a hurry, and it really, I had a rack of lamb. It was very nice, pretty reasonable, nice little place, considering the fact that one woman was serving at least a dozen, about 15 tables. I mean, they didn't have any other help staff. So I'm sitting there, and, you know, checking the menu, and it's just going through my head, everything that happened. I really got a little emotional. I started getting choked up about, well, first of all, yes, this kid. Who is this child? This very, again, normal-looking middle class, or even possibly upper middle class, who's got these lacrosse sticks, well-dressed, clean. I mean, we're not looking at somebody who probably gets no love in his life. Why is he out there trying to compensate for something he may not be getting at home from his parents? Or is maybe there something a little off about him that could be where he is getting love, but he just likes the idea of being hugged? And I felt a little sorry for him in that way, that he would have to approach a person for it. And I felt a little, you know, sorry for me. Well, you know, all artists feel a little sorry for themselves, but just about, well, why did I react that way? Why is it when someone approached me for a very simple, nice gesture, everything that went through my head was, they're going to beat you, they're going to hurt you, they're going to take something from you, what's the angle, what are they trying to take away from you in this transaction? And when it turned out to be nothing, it was really kind of an eye-opener. And I'm not saying now that I'm going to leave my door open at night, at the house. I'm not saying that I'm just going to wear my keys on the outside of my pocket so they can grab them if they really want to. Yeah, I've had some incidents that were not so pleasant in years past. But it was a really sweet thing to happen. And the kicker, the crowner on this is, first of all, again, I'd seen Altar Boys that after, of all days, to see a show about these religious young men who are trying to get the audience to be saved and converted and to accept religion in their life, in a comical way. But still, they're playing off this being good role models. And here I get, like, this angelic kid, who just wants the hug. There's also the Michael Jackson trial going on. And then, like, a couple of days later, there's a story from the Associated Press from Bend, Oregon, wherever the hell that is, where it says, I'll quote a little bit, "Public displays of affection are against the rules at Skyview Middle School in Bend." And a 14-year-old there found that out the hard way. He said, or she said, "I think we should be able to hold hands or hug, at least, because it's not doing anything bad. Some are more in favor for the rule because they say, I think it's nice to keep boundaries for kids. But another kid says, to say no hugging really blows it. That's exactly the sort of trap that, as soon as you say that, what is the first thing everybody's going to want to do?" Unquote. So, hugging is like a sign of affection, someone else says. And one mother mentions that for her it's a politically charged issue. The more people blindly accept these fundamental rights being taken away from them, the easier it becomes for them to be taken away. And again, I don't know if we really need to hug in school. Yeah, and there's 6 hours of the day where kids don't need to be hugging each other, especially when they get to a certain age. And, a teacher should be able to hug a student in the right way at the right moment, but, after Oleana, you got to keep the door open and alert all the other teachers that you're going to be doing it. So, okay, I can see the ban, but at the same time, it's just so strange that literally day or two, and maybe the story broke even before my incident, which would be interesting. Maybe the kid heard about this and said he's going to go around hugging people as his way of personal protest. Whatever it was, I just wanted to say that I'm sorry I doubted. It doesn't mean I won't doubt again. And that I wish that kid a very nice and good life, and I hope he gets a lot of hugs. We'll be back after this.
They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway, and you can see them shine off Broadway too. And if you love the theater scene, you need this special magazine. Performing Arts Insider is for you. Everything you want to know about theater, cabaret, opera, and dance, 516-295-1511, or go to TotalTheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider.
Do you believe in Pod? Not God, Pod. Being able to download radio from the internet and listen to a podcast anytime, anywhere. Well, now you can do it with Dave's Gone By. 20 full episodes downloadable from theaterpod.com. Even without an iPod, you can just listen right on your computer. Go to theaterpod.com for radio on demand and hours of Dave's Gone By to enjoy. Theaterpod.com, it's free because Pod is love.
My radio's on, the news is all bad, but it's good for a laugh.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It is time for the News Gone By, a look at world and local events of the past week from a Bukhak-eyed perspective. In celebrity news, congratulations to Tina Fey and her husband, Jeff Richmond. The Saturday Night Live anchor desk cutie and her husband are expecting their first child due in September. Ultrasound tests reveal that considering the genetics involved, the baby will most likely be a smartass. Goofy story from Japan, where two kitty cats nearly caused a house to burn down. Investigators in Kobe learned that the damaging fire was caused when the owner's cats urinated in his fax machine. Apparently, the pee soaked the electrical printing mechanism, causing sparks and then a smoky fire. The owner escaped without injury, as did the pussies. They did express contrition over the incident. They meowed and promised that from now on, they would piss via email. In news of the we go to Thailand, where Anand Temtan, age 84, was so bothered by his itchy ear that he finally went to the doctor. This after scratching and poking at his eardrum until it bled, by the way. So he gets to his physician, who discovers that the reason for his discomfort is that flies had laid eggs in his ears. They hatched, and his eustachian tubes were crawling with maggots. His doctor used tweezers and suction tubes to get the parasites out, but not before the patient slugged him a couple of times. You see, it seems the hearing-impaired Anand had misheard the doctor when he screamed, "Maggot!" Also in Thailand, congratulations to an 18-year-old woman who gave birth in the back of a Mercedes-Benz. The car was going 85 miles an hour at the time as her husband was trying to rush her to the hospital. The baby came too quick for that, however, and she had a literally bouncing baby boy about 12 miles from their destination. Everything went fine, the baby is healthy, although after examining the car later, police did ticket the mother for breaking dozens of emission standards. In Please Get a Sense of Humor news, some residents of Salem, Massachusetts are upset at the erection of a statue there honoring Elizabeth Montgomery. She, of course, is the late actress who played Samantha on TV's Bewitched. One Salemite told the Associated Press the statue was insensitive, since real women were burned in Salem, whereas Samantha is a fictional comedy character. Duh. Another resident said, a little more logically, that Bewitched really had no connection to the town of Salem, except one time when the cast visited there in 1970. But go figure, the mayor is all for it. Usually it's the mayors and councilmen and small-time bureaucrats who blow hard about such nonsense, but Salem Mayor Stanley Usevich says the statue would be a fun landmark, good for tourists, and far enough away from where the actual hangings happened in 1692, so it's not too incorrect. I don't know, I do think people need to lighten up. I mean, after all, didn't they build that giant statue of Rosie O'Donnell next to the Oreo factory? And what about that lovely tableau of Julie Haggerty and Robert Hayes from Airplane that they're planning as a centerpiece for Ground Zero? Granted, the marble statue of Colonel Klink just outside Auschwitz is a bit much, but other than that, speaking of Germany, guess what was recently on sale at eBay? A car, once registered to none other than Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger. That's right. Officials have confirmed that the original owner of a 1999 metallic gray Volkswagen Golf was the fella the Catholic world now calls Pope. Selling the vehicle on German eBay is 21-year-old Benjamin Halbe, who says, quote, "It drives like heaven." Bids started at about $10,000, and within a day, were up over $1 million. The odd part is that Cardinal Ratzinger has been at the Vatican for 2 decades and never showed any evidence of driving, which is good, because then he'd have to explain the condoms in the glove compartment. But seriously, I'm waiting anxiously to see just how high the auction goes, because I've got some Pope Pius XII scuba gear that should fetch some big bucks. And while we're on a religious theme, it's frivolous lawsuit time! It's frivolous lawsuit time! Lawyers are liars, everyone's slime when it's frivolous lawsuit time! I don't even know which side I hate more in this lawsuit. One side is dumber than the other. Two women, Keziah Hancock and Cindy Stewart, are suing the True and Living Church of Jesus Christ of Saints of the Last Days. If that sounds a little like the Latter-day Saints, well, there's a reason. It was founded by an excommunicated Mormon and lunatic named Jim Harbston. Now, the women claim Harbston defrauded them out of their life savings. They say he had promised them some land and, quote, a face-to-face meeting with Jesus Christ. The women won the initial leg of the lawsuit, but then another judge tossed out the damages, and now they're back in appeals court. Like the Mormons, Harmston's Church of Jesus Christ of Saints of the Last Days also preaches the virtues of polygamy, and it's best known for announcing on its website in 2002 that the end of the world was nigh and that only its members would survive. In their defense, as far as the lawsuit is concerned, the church's attorney said Jim Harmston didn't actually vow to fulfill any promises. Any meeting with Jesus Christ, and I'm not kidding about this, this is their defense. Any FaceTime with JC would have to go not through Jim Harmston, but through God, which is, oddly enough, the most sensible thing anybody said to this point. But go figure, God's been a little too busy to pencil in drinks and sandwiches with two idiots who give all their money to a guy like Jim Harmston. I mean, they might as well let him keep the money since the world's going to end soon anyway, right? I know it's illogical, but if the judge buys it, maybe my credit card company will too. Well, moving on. Hey, what do soldiers in Iraq do when they need a pick-me-up? They get a hua. That's the name of a candy bar. The hua, specially developed by and for the U.S. Armed Forces. It's a power bar packed with calories and carbs, but a lot healthier and apparently tastier than the old field ration D bars of World War II. The hua bar will eventually go civilian and be available in chain stores and Walmarts. So, now, anytime you're bored and want to sink your teeth into a hua, anytime you're hungry, you can lick and nibble on a hua. You can buy up to 5 million bars and turn your kitchen into a hua house. Yes, you're damn right I'm going to beat this pun into the ground. Keep one in your pocket so you can finger a hua anytime you want to. And you can even share a hua with your best friend. Just make sure the wrapper stays on at all times. Here's a story from the New York Post's wonderful Weird But True column. Arguably their only true column, however weird it is. The story is out of British Columbia, where, to protest the dumping of sewage into the Pacific Ocean, a man interrupted a government meeting. He interrupted it by walking in dressed as a giant piece of excrement. He was speedily escorted from the building, but not before everyone waved and thanked John Ashcroft for stopping by. In environmental news, the Dead Sea is dying. According to the Washington Post, over the past half century, the Dead Sea has dropped by more than 80 feet, and the width of the water body has shrunk by a third. Experts say the only way to maintain the volume of the Dead Sea is to pump water from the Red Sea into it. Scientists say the Red Sea is slightly less salty, moderately polluted, and tastes only vaguely of dead Egyptian firstborns. And finally, science news. According to a study conducted in China, Femprox, a new topical cream, helps women with sexual arousal disorder. Results were presented at the annual meeting of the American Urological Association. And they showed that women who spend 5 minutes or more gently rubbing cream back and forth over their vaginas eventually became aroused. Amazing! I don't doubt the findings, I just want the video. No, but seriously, the NextMed company, which makes Femprox, said their unguent tested better than a placebo cream. Not only that, almost by accident, they've discovered a cure to male arousal disorder. It's watching women rub Femprox back and forth over... Yeah. And that's the news gone by for June 23rd, 2005. Please send your comments, opinions, and hua bars to Dave's Gone By. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. That's Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also email davesgoneby@aol.com or... you can just shout out your window and hope I hear. Either way, I love to know your thoughts about the show, your ideas, criticisms, and suggestions. So please, send me cards, letters, packages, postcards, but please, no vaginal ointments. I just have to charge you for parts and labia. Back after this.
And that was news. Yes, that was news. That was very, very, very special news.
Hi, this is Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By, reminding you to tune in every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time for the best of Dave's Gone By on Live365.com and the special channel DFSX Radio. All you gotta do is go to my website, davesgoneby.org, click on the link, and you can hear a classic episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night, 8 and 11. Go to DFSXradio.com for more of me.
Welcome back to the final moments of Dave's Gone By on this June 23rd. Many thanks to Paul Bucock for bantering baseball with us tonight. His show opens next Thursday at the Flea Theater on White Street and runs to late July, Bucock's House of Baseball. Here's hoping it's a hit or a home run. And before I run, let me also wish my mom a very happy birthday in a couple of days. She's just an extraordinary, amazing woman, and I love her a whole bunch. Happy birthday, Mom, and a million more. I want to thank Program Director Tom Ross, my beautiful wife Joyce, my sponsors, Total Theater, publishers of Performing Arts Insider, and Hewlett-Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings. Thanks to Marty and Jonathan at TheaterPod.com for putting vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By online for all to hear, and thanks to all of you for listening. Don't forget, you can go to my website, davesgoneby.org, and listen to another older episode of Dave's Gone By right now, courtesy of DFSX Radio. And if you come back to WGBB at 9, you'll hear me host a different program, Filler Up, an hour of eclectic music. Tonight's show celebrates the birthdays of three theater and movie legends, Frank Lesser, Richard Rodgers, and Mel Brooks. That's Filler Up an hour from now. And then 1 week from now, June 30th, a brand new Dave's Gone By, our 133rd episode. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night, good huggin', and gone by.
Won't take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. I need something up. I'll buy you Cracker Jack. As long as you count my outs when I come up to bat. Oh, now it's root, root, root. Root, root, root for both. Win or lose, lose or win, we're all a fan.